We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Talking about the summit that, you know, so it gets confused with Vietnam and time and days and so forth. But I in terms of our time, I guess we'll start here with Eric Gomez, policy analyst for defense and defense. Talk about the Saints later on. For defense and foreign policy studies at the Cato Institute. Good morning, Eric.
Morning, Tommy. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, sir, for taking the time with us. Tell me in terms of timelines and our days, when the two are going to meet. Are they having dinner or when are they summiting, et cetera?
That's a great question. So it's a 12-hour time difference from the East Coast to Hanoi. So that means it is 7 p.m. in the evening over there right now. So I think they're going to start meeting in the evening our time. So in the morning, Hanoi's time on Wednesday. They're going to start meeting, I believe, in the evening tonight.
See, and that's why I said it was complicated. I'm sorry to start with that, Eric. Somebody texted this in, and I find this interesting. On a lighter note, we were saying, fill in the blanks for us. I trust Kim Jong-un as much as I trust. And somebody texted this in and said, more than Chucky or Nancy Nag, talking about Chuck Schumer or Nancy Pelosi. Wow, really? Really?
Oh, man.
That's tough, isn't it? It's a tough crowd. Tell me about what they hope to accomplish and how trustworthy is Kim Jong-un, and is it that simple when you look at foreign policy played out at this level?
Well, I think what's important to do is judge him against sort of specific agreements. And when I look at the South Korean-North Korean process, it gives me a bit more hope because the South Koreans were able to get Kim to agree to some very specific military confidence-building measures along the DMZ, which separates the two Koreas. When Moon Jae-in went to Pyongyang for a summit near the tail end of last year, and so far it seems like both North Korea and South Korea are living up to those agreements. They're following through on what they promised. So I think that's a good sign. The problem with, I think, from the U.S. perspective is that because the agreements we got out of Singapore were pretty broad and not very detailed, there was a lot of wiggle room for Kim to kind of, do other things that we might not have wanted him to do or interpret things in a way that we didn't want him to interpret. So I think that going into this summit in Hanoi, getting more detailed agreements on paper is going to be a top U.S. priority going forward.
Was there really an agreement last time? I guess it's all in the words, huh, Eric? There was an agreement to move forward pretty much?
Yeah, basically. It was like, we're going to move forward. There were some specifics about getting some remains of U.S. soldiers who died in the Korean War back
which happened,
in the United
right?
States, which did happen.
Okay.
But everything else was still pretty open. There was an agreement that the North would denuclearize, and there wasn't really a timeline for that. There wasn't really any, okay, this is what we want you to do. But I think the first summit was still a very positive thing because it opened the process, right? And this is the continuation of that process. One thing that has been kind of floating around in the press about what might come out of Hanoi is this idea of a liaison office in North Korea for the United States. I think that would be very important because it's not the same thing as an embassy, but you can use it to have sort of daily or near daily meetings between U.S. and North Korean officials to kind of work out the agreements on a day-to-day working level basis. And that would be a huge advantage in terms of talking to the other side, make sure that they're doing what we expect and that we're doing what they expect, that sort of thing.
I guess, in a way, that would be almost the first step toward a consulate and then an embassy, if everything goes well?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I think that this idea of the importance of changing the bigger sort of political and a security relationship with the North as part of this process is important. Previous efforts of U.S. diplomacy that did have some success, narrowly speaking, never really they talked about having this kind of like reassurance to the North, and they talked about having a political relationship, but it was always kind of narrowly focused on nuclear weapons, and it never really got anywhere. If the Trump administration is able to make these discussions about more than just the nuclear weapons and sort of talk about other things that the North Koreans have wanted to talk about for a long time, that might open the door to them doing some things that they haven't considered before on their end when it comes to giving up nuclear weapons. I think we'll have to see, but I'm pretty optimistic about Hanoi. I think that I'm looking forward to what comes out of it, and I hope that it'll, you know, keep us on the path that we're already on.
So how much progress have we made so far compared to, let's take President Trump as opposed to other administrations?
Well, other administrations have gotten more detailed agreements before. The agreed framework, for example, in the 90s under the Clinton administration, was largely successful at limiting North Korean nuclear facilities. But then it kind of fell apart near the end of his term when the cheating was discovered on the North Korean side, and the North Koreans also wanted to have more discussions about the types of things that Trump is probably going to talk about at Hanoi regarding a peace declaration, and the U.S. wasn't really prepared to do that. So it's weird because Trump has sort of accomplished not as much and more at the same time. In the not as much category, he hasn't made as much progress on nuclear weapons issues specifically. That has still been pretty broad.
That's a perfect stopping point, Eric, because we got to go to traffic. Yeah. And when we come back, I want to ask you about nuts and bolts, expectations going in. How do you gauge what's successful and what's not? And what would we like the North Koreans to do or stop doing? And what would they like us to do or stop doing? Eric Gomez, our guest, absolutely, policy analyst for defense and foreign policies studies at the Cato Institute. If you have any questions or comments, 260-1870, and we're asking you to fill in our question. I trust Kim Jong-un as much as I trust blank. And of course, it came in, you knew it was gonna, as much as they trust an NFL official to throw a flag. Here's traffic, WWL. 624, talking about the president and the summit that's going to happen with Kim Jong-un in Vietnam. So, Eric, going into the summit, does either side normally have a set of expectations like, here's a goal, here's what we're trying to do, here's what we'll accept, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah, I think that's that's fair that they would have that. I think on the U.S. side, what we've seen or what I've seen in the last sort of few months especially has been what I would call like right-sizing expectations. I think that coming out of Singapore, the administration kind of played up what they accomplished in terms of, you know, oh, this isn't a threat anymore. Oh, you know, the problem's solved. And a lot of us in the expert community were kind of like, well, there isn't really much movement going on here. But now I think the administration has done a much better job of kind of saying, you know, Trump saying that we're fine as long as they're not testing missiles and rockets. I took that to be like, you know, a good sign in terms of we won't walk away from the table out of frustration. So that way the North Koreans can sort of have a bit more confidence that we're willing to talk things out and be patient. And then I think sort of getting more into the specifics on, you know, there's been a lot of talk about Yongbyon, the nuclear facility in North Korea that we want them to dismantle. So getting into those specifics that I mentioned earlier.
So as it stands now, does North Korea have the ability to strike the United States with a nuclear missile?
Yeah, I think we have to assume that. They tested ICBMs three times, two different models, one of them twice, one of them once. The last model they tested probably in November of 2017 is probably the one that could actually, you know, make the trip all the way with a warhead. I know like there's been a lot of doubt in terms of, well, could this thing fly to full range? Could this thing re-enter the atmosphere effectively? The way I'm looking at it, it's sort of like, what happens if you're wrong, right? if you're guessing that they can't do it and then they actually can, I think that's a worse world than if you guess they can do it and they actually can't. With nuclear weapons, it's good to be cautious about some things.
So are we talking about Hawaii or the U.S. mainland?
Both. I think the Hwasong 14 could probably range Hawaii, Alaska, and maybe part of the Northwest. But the 15 that they tested in November 2017 could probably range almost everything except Florida, maybe.
Wow. That would include us. In terms of...
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, well, that's good news. Thank you, Eric. In terms of being able to live with things from North Korea, can the United States accept any kind of agreement that would allow North Korea to launch a nuclear missile and hit the United States? That they would have the capability of doing it, or would that have to be dismantled?
I think that the plan is still to have them not have that capability. But it's a question of how do you get that, right? Because it's a question of sort of science and engineering. You could dismantle factories, you could sort of monitor units, you could get inspectors in the country to just keep tabs on everything. There isn't really, I think, a way to completely eliminate the risk, but you can just set up a lot of roadblocks and barriers that would make it harder in the future for them to get a program off the ground. But I think that in the short run, what would be a better frame of reference here for North Korea is figuring out, how do we get some measure of arms control on them? How do we get them to agree to, for example, stop producing fissile material for weapons?
Which they are, which they continue to do, right?
Potentially. I think that recent sort of satellite imagery of the Yongbyon complex, which produces plutonium, has shown that even though the facility is being maintained, it doesn't appear like it's in day-to-day operation. But it's unclear if they have other facilities for enriching uranium, for example, which is another nuclear material that can be used for warheads.
I get a text here. It's pretty interesting. Our time's running out, Eric, and I want to get to it for the listener. Does Kim actually believe the brainwashing rhetoric that they tell their citizens, or does he live in reality and just use the misinformation to control the citizens, and he recognizes, in essence, the real deal and what the situation is?
Yeah, I think he realizes that. You know, I think that he's a sane actor. I think he's rational from his perspective, in terms of he's both trying to survive within a brutal system at home and trying to, you know, preserve some measure of insurance against invasion against a very strong military power in the United States. So I think in those contexts, yeah, he's a rational guy. He's not a nice guy. He's not, I would say, a good guy, but I think that it's someone we can cut a deal with, and we've cut a deal with some pretty bad people in the past. So I'm not really sure why it took us so long to kind of have these leader to leader meetings with the North Koreans and try and use diplomacy to reduce risk.
30 seconds left, Eric. A lot of people don't realize North Korea and the history of the Korean War and why they're so afraid of invasion, et cetera. Mm-hmm. They can look it up. Tell me about the end of the war, a peace declaration, because that war is technically still going on. Does that play an important role in this?
I would think so. I think that, so the peace declaration would be important because it's a written down political statement by the United States that we are going to work to end the war. And that is something we have never been really prepared to offer the North Koreans before in negotiations. And I think it would be a concrete sign that we are interested not only in nuclear issues narrowly defined, but also in sort of resolving these other political and security issues that are kind of like the root cause of why North Korea got nuclear weapons in the first place.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.